and welcome back to 24 Minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I am Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are refusing to go to rehab as we talk about the A24 documentary, Amy.
Archival footage and personal testimonials present an intimate portrait of the life and career of British singer-songwriter Amy Winehouse. Now, you may be asking yourself, why are you talking about Amy? I thought you were going to do I Saw the TV Glow, and that's what we put out on socials, and that's what we're very excited to talk about this week on the pod. And then A24, they A24'd, and they only dropped I Saw the TV Glow in New York and L.A. Sophie Holsinger, our co-host of the Movie Drop podcast, has seen the movie twice already, and it has not come to our city. So we were like, let's cover Amy instead. Because there's a biopic coming out, and that's the best we could do.
we can do this documentary, can already tell you, is going to be better than Back to Black, yes. The movie for sure. So, watch this instead of going to see that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. We're going to talk about I Saw the TV Glow next week, though, I think, which is really, really exciting. Of course, we do have a few housekeeping things to talk about before we get into Amy, a documentary that I was unfamiliar with. I know essentially nothing about Amy Winehouse. So like this doc was that's like it's my bedrock now for everything I know about Amy Winehouse. I'm really interested to get into that conversation with you. I have three things to talk about for housekeeping. We talked about Friday the 13th a little bit last week and how it's been like scrapped / paused / like we don't know really what's going on. So a little bit more came out about that. Kevin Williamson of the Scream franchise revealed that he developed an episode for the prequel series. He described it as bloody horrific and an hour-long chase episode. Why is this scrapped? Like, why are we canceling this? That sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds perfect, and I have no idea why A24 is just like, you know what, the guy who made one of the best modern horror films of all time, we should cancel his episode and just like, scrap this thing. Like, I don't understand it. Weirder stuff has happened for sure, but it just seems like they should have let this happen. I'm curious what route they're going to go since this apparently isn't it.
I don't get it because like we have X, we have Pearl, we have Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Like we have things in that vein that are like bloody and, you know, slasher-esque. Yeah. And like, I don't think A24 is afraid to play in that sandbox. So I don't really, I'm confused because that sounds like a really good episode of television. And that's kind of a bummer. Number two thing, Climax, one of our favorite movies here on the pod. Ben, your favorite top five A24?
Rushmore, for sure. Yeah. It's up there.
It's gotta be. Without a doubt. Gotta be. It's playing in IMAX. It's not playing in the States in IMAX, but I did want to bring this up on the pod because it's playing at the BFI IMAX Theater in the UK. News came out this week that is happening. Now, Climax, it kind of has like a cult following. I feel like it's slowly over the last like maybe 18 months kind of been part of the reclamation project of a lot of movies as of late where it's like, no, this is actually a really good movie. I don't know if I'm ever going to watch that movie again. And to that point, I don't know if I could watch it in IMAX. Like, I just don't know if my heart could take it, you know?
It'd be a lot. I don't know that I'd ever watch it again unless like it was someone's first time.
Sure. So you want to watch it with them for their first time?
Yeah, I don't know that I would ever on my own watch it for any reason.
No, that's psychotic. Yeah,
it's a powerful film. Like it sticks with you. It knows what it's doing. I cannot imagine, like, you know, I talked about like skipping Hereditary and IMAX because of how much it fucked me up. I can't imagine watching Climax in IMAX. That would just be insane, but also probably just an amazing theater experience.
At the BFI IMAX, no less, which is like highly regarded as one of the best IMAX screens in the world. So I feel like to your point, that would be an incredible theater going experience.
Yeah.
Okay. So if Climax comes to the States, are we in? Are we going? Or we're out?
I don't know, man. That'd be so interesting. Like it's such an interesting film, just being the whole like one take situation. But the kid in the boiler room, like, there's just so much shit that I was like, I don't know that I can watch it again. I don't know. It sticks with you.
I don't know either. I don't know either. It does really, really stick with you. So the reason I ask, and I'm curious, because Uncut Gems is coming to IMAX the week after this episode comes out. So I believe it's May
22nd.
22nd? Yeah, yeah, Wednesday, May 22nd. So this is like the final in this kind of trilogy of IMAX screenings that A24 has been doing on a monthly basis for a few months now. So they started with Ex Machina, they did Hereditary, and now they're doing Uncut Gems. I've seen both Ex Machina and Hereditary. Are you going to see Uncut Gems in IMAX?
I want to. I'll say that.
I will be so sad if you don't. You know how much that movie means to me.
Be so sad. You'll be so fucked up.
I'll be so fucked up. It's not even a joke. So it sounded like in the email that A24 kind of sent out to like remind people, hey, this is coming out next week. It did say that it is now part of a monthly series from A24. Now,
yes,
I could be reading way too much into this, and they could just mean like this monthly series for 3 months, and that was it. And we all had a fun time, we all liked it, and we'll do it again never. But I don't know. They're doing Climax in IMAX, which is just incredible selling point. I don't know why you wouldn't do that here. In the UK, it sounds to me like they're gonna keep with this process. Is that how you took it? Like reading a monthly occurrence?
Yeah, for sure. That kind of felt like that's what they've got to be doing. It felt like they're testing it out with arguably three of their bigger films ever.
Yeah.
Doing one like Climax would be interesting to see what the turnaround would be or the turnout would be for something like that. I don't know that it has the same pull as Uncut Gems or Ex Machina or anything like that, but it would be awesome to see these things have them, you know, give a second life in IMAX. And yeah, I mean, once a month, I feel like this must have been a profitable thing for them. Like,
had to be.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out if they continue to do it.
Yeah, I feel like it had to be. I'm just curious, looking forward. So, say they do another 3 month run. I would bet that Climax is one of those. I think that feels to me like weird enough and like so A24 core that they would hope that they get the right audience out to that kind of a movie. Plus Climax and IMAX, just unbeatable. I think you got to take advantage, strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
It's in there. I don't know why you wouldn't do it. But if you go for another 3 months, I'm just trying to think what do you put in there? Because Everything Everywhere All at Once had an IMAX run.
Yeah.
It was only a couple of years ago. I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't be afraid to re-release it. I'm sure it's got the cachet. People would show up. But I don't know. I don't know. Do you do something like The Lighthouse? Do you keep with like the, you know, the Hereditary kind of vibes of things? Or you toss out some like fucking banger movie that you would never get the chance to see in IMAX. Like put Under the Silver Lake in IMAX.
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
Cool. That'd be awesome.
Just thinking out loud here.
I wondered if they would do some of their quote unquote summer movies and do something like Midsommar.
Oh, interesting.
You know what? Let's do mid 90s too. Let's do all the mid movies. I think those will be awesome to see.
A
in the
summer of mid.
The summer of mid, you know? I think that'd be pretty sweet to see that in IMAX.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty sick as well. I do think Midsommar would be included in this next like trifecta because it feels like to me, Hereditary and Midsommar are like the horror stamps of the A24 brand.
For
so
sure.
If they used Hereditary for this one, they'd probably use Midsommar for the next one. Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm really curious to see if they do stick with it. I like low key. I'm like, let's put First Reformed in IMAX this summer. Let's fucking live it up.
I was gonna ask you like, what movie would you want them to do?
I think Midsommar is a really easy answer. I think The Lighthouse is an easy answer, even though I'm pretty mixed on that film still. I think something more interesting would be like a First Reformed or, I mean, I don't know. Like it's hard because when you get in this new era of A24, like Beau's Afraid went on IMAX. Civil War went on IMAX.
Yeah.
Everything Everywhere went on IMAX. Like all of these things lived on IMAX. And then you have this really small sliver of things that I feel like are very socially known. The Hereditaries, the Uncut Gems, the Midsommars, everything after that is much more niche, is much more like Climax or Under the Skin, or it's like Spring Breakers, or like kind of weird A24 shit that I don't know if people would really show up for. But my three would be Midsommar, The Lighthouse, and First Reformed. Fuck it. I'm going to send it.
Do it.
That would be my three. That would be what I want.
A real wild card there.
True wild card. What would what would be your triple feature?
Just because I'd want to experience it in theaters, Last Black Man.
Oh, that would be so good. Wow.
All that San Francisco footage in IMAX. Man, I don't know. There's so many good ones. I mean, I don't want to copy you, but the Midsommar, you know, being one of my favorites, it'd be hard not to want to see that as well. Dude, there's just so many amazing visuals in some of these films, so much to choose from. Like, honestly, I wouldn't be upset to watch Marcel in fucking IMAX. You know what I mean?
Let's
like,
go, yeah.
Like, just about anything, I would totally be here for it. But, yeah, you mentioned it. Spring Breakers would be fucking rad to see in IMAX. Just see them seeing Britney Spears sick. In IMAX. I'm on board, man. Let's do it.
I think we should do that. I think we should go Spring Breakers. I think we should just fucking go Tusk. And then we should go, like, St. Maud. That should be our three. That would really separate the water from the oil here. And that that would really weed out the people
who's
that like movies and don't like movies.
Can you imagine people showing up for St. Maud? Just like, what in the fuck?
Fucking
like,
sickos.
This is the Love Lies Bleeding lady? Like, yeah, this is the same one.
That's what I'm saying, man. That'd be sick.
Capitalize like, on it.
Make it happen. Make it happen. Yeah, I'm curious to see if that does happen. We'll see, I guess, if there's any news on that front in the coming weeks. Last piece of housekeeping. New piece of A24 production news. Zac Efron is going to star in Ty West's new movie called Night Business. A24 is going to be producing it. It is set in the 80s. A knife-wielding killer commits extreme acts of violence on exotic dancers. Only one man has a will powerful enough to stop him. Is Zac Efron the killer, or is he the man that's stopping the killer? That's my first question to you.
I kind of hope he's the killer. I think it'd be amazing.
Me too. Me too.
I think he'd be so good.
I think he'd be very, very good as the killer. This movie sounds sick as hell. It sounds like Ty West is taking that Maxine energy and just like delivering it to more things, which I'm not going to complain about at all. I think this sounds great. Obviously, very early stages. We don't know anything more than this, but it sounds great. I'm in.
Makes me feel like Ty West watched The Iron Claw. I was like, I need that guy for sure, which I'm on board with. 100% gives Zac Efron more shit to do.
Yeah, he was probably like, yo, that guy would be really good in a horror movie. We should
see him
it.
Killing some people. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's get him in that situation. Yeah, I think that is really exciting news. I'm, of course, like as the days pass, I'm more and more excited for Maxine. I still think the trailer is ridiculously long because I have to watch it before every A24 movie that I go see in the theater now. And it's crazy, but like I get hyped every time I watch it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be great. I think it's going to be a great end of the trilogy. I'm excited to see what they pull off. But if this is what Ty West is following it up with, I'm very excited for it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I'm super here for it. It sounds like A24 just needs to keep bankrolling him and see what he makes. Okay, let's talk about Amy. Now, this is interesting. We've only talked about a couple of documentaries before here on the show. We did Val. That's the Val Kilmer documentary, which I thought was quite interesting. I think we did another documentary. Am I misremembering?
You could be remembering correctly, but I don't remember. So I think at the very least, this is our second three name titled documentary from A24 that we watched.
Yeah, this is true.
Name, yes.
Three letter name documentary. Val and Amy, they like to just stick to the first names. They
just
like to go. That's probably what they do. They're like, oh, you're making a doc? Is it about someone with a three letter name? Because that's all we accept.
That's, I mean, maybe the next one will be about me. Who knows? You know what I mean? It's Ben.
Anything's possible. Ben.
Just like Ben.
The holy trinity of documentaries right there.
Val, Amy, Ben.
are you a doc guy? How do you feel about docs? Where are you at on them?
I love docs. I think docs are amazing. I could watch them all day long. I think they're super interesting. I think they've just become even more popular now. Even, I mean, obviously, like the crime docs, you know, the murder docs are like everything. They're everywhere, kind of ubiquitous out there in the documentary world. But I think a good doc is just as powerful, if not more, than like a fictional narrative. Like, there's so many great things that they could tell. We'll talk about some of them in our A1 acts. Some of my favorite movies are in there. So I love docs. What about you?
Yeah, I would say I'm pretty lukewarm on docs. Like, I like them. I don't necessarily seek them out. And I don't necessarily like find myself, you know, like frothing at the mouth to be like, I need to watch a documentary. It's just like not really something I gravitate towards. I did recently watch a very interesting documentary for the Seattle International Film Festival called My Sextortion Diary. And it was very fascinating about kind of the repercussions and the world of sextortion and like basically outing private photos of people for blackmail money. And it was cut very interestingly. I think documentaries do allow for a much more fascinating and nuanced, like, dynamic energy. Cutting style, editing style, narrative. It feels like documentaries do take advantage. And I think Amy does so to an extent of like, you thought we were going in this direction and then we're just going to do a quick UE and pivot everything. And nothing is what you thought, which I'm always here for. I think makes a really interesting film for sure. This documentary is 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you felt about that, because most documentaries that I come into contact with are like, I don't know, 90 to 110. Mm-hmm. They're not 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff I think that could have been trimmed out, but I think they had interviews with people that I wouldn't have expected them to have interviews with. So I wonder if it was just like a, you know, just all these great interviews. And it's like, how much do you cut down? Like, the cutting room floor must have just had so much stuff if they still ended up with a movie over 2 hours long. So yeah, I don't know. It flowed okay for the most part for me, but there's definitely stuff that could have been trimmed out.
Yeah, I'm of the same thought process. I think we gotta cut like 37 minutes out of this thing. Like, I don't know what it is in particular. It does seem like a lot of the things that get discussed and talked about in this film are like kind of recycling, and like we're doing the same things or for like long, like prolonged periods of time, where it felt to me the first time that I saw an instance or a situation, I was like, okay. Like, got it. That makes sense. Yeah. And then we can like move forward, where maybe we kind of linger on that for like 6 or 7 minutes. So it felt long. But I still think it is a good documentary. Like, I think it gets a message across. It's obviously very interesting when it comes to Amy Winehouse. I knew nothing about her, and I don't know anything about her really outside of this documentary. Did you know very much going into this? I know you've seen this movie before.
Yeah, I mean, I knew her in the sense of like anyone that was paying attention, I guess, to pop music or whatever when she came out. It's like, you all know Rehab. I was familiar with Frank, like her album before Back to Black. Like, I don't know. I mean, I thought she was a super talented person, like almost it felt like everyone else did as well, you know. So, but there was definitely stuff that I learned through this documentary, just like, you know, her dad, who I'm sure we will talk about, her relationship with Blake and how that kind of led to eventually her downfall or her demise. So I was familiar with her, but I wasn't like a diehard fan or anything like that.
Yeah, I had no idea she was like 23 when she was winning like Record of the Year. That stuff is crazy to me, how young she actually was to like be going through all of this. You mentioned her dad. We'll probably talk about him a little bit as we go through some of the beats of the movie and maybe one of the big scenes. But man, kind of a terrible guy. Like, sucks. I feel like I walked away from the movie and I was like, this guy sold, basically he sold his daughter's soul at the glimpse of his own reality TV show. That's like, that's pretty much what he did. And obviously she dies and that's what he's left with. Like, it seems like a absolutely horrendous trade, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, and just to hear him say some of that stuff in the moment, you know, about knowing like, oh no, she's fine, she doesn't need rehab. It's like, dude, just because, you know, you're probably going to profit off her going on tour doesn't mean that should be your priority. But unfortunately, it sounded like it kind of was. And yeah, he just didn't have, I feel like his interest was the most important thing to him, which is such a bummer when you're dealing with someone with like such fame, but also with like an addiction problem. So yeah, dude is pretty shitty. He sucked.
Yeah. He was looking out for himself. That's pretty much all that was happening there. I did think it was really interesting towards the, I guess towards the end of the movie, like when Amy goes to St. Lucia and kind of like has her 6 months of like, I'm not doing drugs, but I'm drinking myself under the table every day. Like, also, I don't want cameras around. And her dad just brings a whole fucking crew to this island and is just like, let me roll up and like document everything going on here, which is exactly what she didn't want. Kind of wild. Like, kind of, I don't think I could do that as a dad, like as a person even. And it's terrible.
Yeah. What kind of person are you, I guess, to feel that way about someone that you're supposed to be taking care of? You know, I know she was an adult, but it's still your child, you know, like you would imagine you'd still have their best interests in mind. And this dude just didn't provide that at all. It sucked. And she loved him. She looked up to him so much that, like, unfortunately, what he said carried so much weight, which is why it's like, it just would have been so important for him to be like, yeah, maybe we do need to like get some help, you know, but he wasn't interested in that.
That's what's so fascinating to me. If that one opportunity that he basically is like, no, she doesn't need to go to rehab, she's fine. If he swerves and he goes the other way and he's like, probably a good idea, let's get you into rehab, let's get you off touring, let's get you healthy again. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're looking at a completely different person, singer, artist, history of her, the music genre, like jazz as a whole. Like, that's insane to me. That like he, I just feel like he's kind of to blame in this situation.
Yeah. I mean, the doc definitely kind of painted it that way, but I don't disagree. Like he, it feels like he should carry a much bigger burden than the interviews made it seem to believe that he does. Yeah. He kind of felt like, you know, like, I don't know. He didn't seem bothered by some of his decision-making, which is crazy.
I thought it was really funny that, like, we do get some instances of him and like interviewing him and stuff. There's one instance where it's basically like footage from a TV show that was taking place like in the UK that he was like the star of or whatever. So it wasn't like for this documentary specifically, but it was for the TV show. And he was like, yeah, we're just getting ready to go on a tour. Going to talk about some business stuff. Sounds really exciting. I'm really excited for what's ahead. And he was just like packing up his toiletries. And I was like, dude, you're on another planet right now. Like, are you not aware of what is going on around you? It seemed really, really wild to me. I have one more question for you. So Amy Winehouse, it's pretty fucking famous.
Yeah.
Like, not overnight, but like pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It seems in the course of, you know, 5 years, 4 years. Do you think you could ever be that famous?
I can't imagine, A, what it would be for, you know what I mean? And two, like, why anyone would want that? Like, that just seems nuts to me. Like, it's kind of crazy, just like the idea of kids nowadays, like, they don't necessarily want a job. They just want to be famous. They just want to be known. Or like, oh, that sounds awful to me. Like, that just sounds insane. So I have zero interest in that whatsoever. It looks like a nightmare. And I mean, it kind of feels like it was for her to some extent.
Yeah. So you're anti-fame. You're just like, this is just, it's not for you.
This is as big as it gets. You know what I mean? Like anyone that ats me when they're upset about a movie draft, like that's the most fame I need is something
peak
like that.
Peak of your famous existence right there?
Yeah, like, that's fair. Someone tagged me. Fuck, what do I get? What do I do?
Oh, goddamn. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I could hang with that level of fame. I do have an interest and like not an obsession by any means, but like definitely a fascination with like how people get more famous and mm-hmm. like what that means for their life and their job and their personality and like what that is. But it does seem, and I think, you know, this isn't like a new revelation to anybody, but like some people are just not meant for that. Like some people are just not cut out for that level of fame. And obviously Amy Winehouse not cut out for that level of fame, but I do think she had a lot of things going against her at the same time. Like she had Blake in her life, which was like her longtime boyfriend and then husband and her drug buddy. And she had her dad going against her. And like, she had all these contractual obligations that she didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. All of these things that made her not want to be famous. So that's really interesting to me. I'm with you though. I think anytime someone tags me on Twitter, I was like, oh shit, we've done it. Like, this mm-hmm. is crazy. I'm in someone's brain and I've made it.
Yeah. And that's where we are. And
that's all we need.
Usually it's because someone's mad that I picked a movie or I didn't pick a movie or I didn't veto Pulp Fiction at sixth place. So yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. All very fair reasons to tag you on Twitter, honestly. Okay.
Sophie, I can't believe you did that. That's insane.
God, we'll never live that down. Never. We'll never live that down. She's never coming on this pod, that's for sure. She's lost all guest privileges.
Yeah, justice for Purple Rain.
Just absolutely not. Absolutely not. Let's break down this movie a little bit. Like, I don't really want to do true cinema in particular, but I do think it's worth mentioning some of the things that kind of spur on the narrative of this movie. The first one I wrote down here is her signing for basically, I think they mentioned £250,000. Mm-hmm. And she is a nobody. She's like a no name. She signs on this record label and they're like, you've got the voice of a generation, Step Brothers style, and you got to make an album. And she does it. She comes out with Frank. Like, I've never listened to her music. Really, this doc was the most of her music I've ever heard in my life. Kind of a big deal, and like it kind of really pays off for the studio.
For sure. Yeah, that was a great investment on their part and a really good example of just raw talent, you know, because I mean these producers and stuff noticed it, was just like, oh yeah, you can't really teach someone to sing like this. Like, this is a natural thing. This is unique. This is powerful. I mean, that's what her voice was. It was amazing. So it kind of makes sense that they're just like, listen, we'll give you $250,000 to be with us because you've got, you know, a multi-million dollar voice.
Yeah, that's crazy. That is really interesting to me. We sit behind microphones and we podcast every single week. And I don't even have a podcasting voice, in my opinion. So to have the voice like Amy Winehouse to just be like, yeah, I sing and I just make magic happen. That's insane to me.
But I will say we are open to being put on retainer for $250,000. If you're out there listening, like you can have this non-podcast voice.
We are not totally signed anywhere. We have no legal obligations. We're totally up in the air.
I am most loyal to whoever will give me the most money, just like Dwight Schrute. So yeah, that's where my loyalty lies. Whoever will give me the most.
Yeah, Mr. Fame over here. Holy cow. You just send the dollars my way, please.
Yeah, just give me money. That's all I want. But one thing I do want to say before we move on is like the opening of this movie, I think, is also so powerful where like we're at her friend's birthday party, little get together. I think it's her 14th birthday party. So imagine Amy's in that same age range. And they start singing happy birthday to her. And then eventually like Amy just kind of like takes off with her singing. Not like it doesn't seem like she's trying to show off or anything. It's just like how she instinctively wants to sing this. And it's just like, man, you were 13 or 14 and you're singing like this. Like, this is insane. It's just, it was really cool to see how organic it had been. It seemed like, you know, her entire life that she just had this gift. So, and what a, you know, the fame that it brought her and all that kind of stuff. But I thought it was a really cool way to start the movie.
Yeah, it was really, really fascinating. And I agree with you. I was like, damn, she is she's young and like she can have that kind of talent. That's seriously insane.
Yeah.
Rehab pops off as a single. She kind of says like, I didn't really think it was going to be a single. I didn't really want it to be a single. The record label made it a single, mm-hmm. and it kind of became the song that she was like known by. Like that was her song. Yeah. And what I found the most interesting throughout this entire doc is like, as we go through, we get these song interludes with the lyrics, which was done very kind of, you know, innovatively. And I did not realize all of these songs are 1,000,000% true. Like she mm-hmm. just actually lived every single thing she wrote down. And so listening to Rehab, I was like, oh, that's a tough beat. Like, damn, that's crazy. How like the juxtaposition of like, this is my terrible story with Rehab and like why I won't go. Mm-hmm. It's also the thing that made me the most famous in the world.
Yeah. It's a really interesting trade off. And like we get the answer from her at the end, according to her bodyguard, but like, would you have traded this fame?
Yeah.
Just for like still being here. And she was, you know, she said that's what she wanted. So like, yeah, in retrospect, like she would have taken herself to rehab. And even when she is in rehab with Blake, you know, she's like, it's not that bad here. So it's something that's the thing I think about rehab is you have to want to be there. So otherwise it's not going to really work, but it is interesting to think about what could have been.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting. I mean, she goes to rehab. She says she doesn't mind it, but she goes to rehab with Blake, like mm-hmm. as part of his decision, which again, like, really interesting because they have basically like a rehab specialist like voiceover being like mm-hmm. I would have never allowed them to go to rehab together, like that's literally why it won't work, and they end up going, and then 3 days later after they get out of rehab they go on a binge and they like come out of a bar or like a room or something with like scars on their faces and like bandages all over their bodies and absolutely insane type of stuff. The relationship with Blake, we've kind of mentioned a little bit, absolutely like grade A, just like parasitic behavior basically. Mm-hmm. Like Amy was so obsessed with Blake, she couldn't get out of his clutches, and like he would do things and she just wanted to copy him and do the same things that he did, and he was a drug addict, and so like she ended up doing those things. And she only breaks free of him once he gets arrested for like evading court. And then she can't physically see him anymore. That's wild.
And that just kind of destroyed her, is what it, you know, kind of came across as, like just like being away from him. But yeah, their connection, if you want to call it that, is just so, so interesting. It's nothing that she could ever get rid of. You know, it was just always there. It's such a powerful draw. So I thought that was a really interesting part of the story here, is just how much influence he had over her well-being.
I watched part of the doc last night and then I finished it today, and I watched part of it last night and started to get into this kind of like second act Blake narrative storyline. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself like, oh, this is actually kind of cut together like a crime doc a little bit, where mm-hmm. it's just like giving us pretty dark information and telling us like who's at fault, and like we're in a really dark world and the victim and all this kind of stuff. And I just really gave off that vibe. I don't necessarily know if that's good or bad in terms of this doc, but I found it entertaining to say the least. Like it definitely made for the narrative to be like, oh wow, there's like some bad people in her life. And I understand that now.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hard part, is like when you have fame and money, that's you got to be careful, I guess, who's around you, to say the least. And that's, she seems to be proof of that.
Yeah. Contract to go to rehab. I wanted to call this out because Blake gets arrested. She basically signs a contract with Universal that is like, I will go to rehab before I make my next album, which I've never heard of really anybody doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if they did that now, I don't necessarily know if it would be kept under wraps better or like secretive,
yeah, or I don't know
what the case may be, but like that, I just found that really, really interesting that she signed that, because I took that as a notice of, like you said, like she doesn't mind going to rehab, like she wants to do that, but all the forces around her are basically telling her not to. And that's pretty wild to me. Wins a Grammy for Record of the Year. That is so wild. And not only wins it over people like Beyonce. I thought a great Justin Timberlake dig in here.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Fantastic.
If that's what he called his album.
Yeah. That was hilarious. But she wins Record of the Year, talks to her friend as all the celebration is going on, and basically tells her friend, like, this is boring without drugs. And I was like, oh my God. That's crazy. Like, I just could not even fathom getting to that stage. We were just like, man, this, like, winning Grammy of the Year, or winning, you know, Record of the Year, this is so lame. I wish I was on drugs.
Yeah, like, the amount of success that brings, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. To have won this award at such a young age, it's just, like, it's phenomenal. And the only thing she's thinking about is, like, oh, this would be so much more fun if I was high. Like, this is kind of boring, actually. That, man, just kind of speaks to how addicted and addictive that stuff is.
Yeah, that is mind-boggling to me. I mentioned St. Lucia. She goes to St. Lucia. She kind of has this healthy period, and then her dad brings along this whole gamer crew, which I thought was just grade A, like, terrible parent-type stuff.
I do like, too, though, when the people ask for a picture, he's like, oh, I'm really sorry to do this. You know, can we get a picture?
She's hilarious.
Like, listen, if you were really sorry, you wouldn't be asking for it. You know? The dad's like, you can't say that to people. It's like, listen, man, like, if they... Don't bullshit me. Don't be like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, you're not, because you're still asking for it. So you're not that sorry.
Yeah. I love that. That's it. So where are you at on that? Have you ever met any, like, celebrities, asked them for a picture or anything like that?
One, like, I fall to the other side where it's just like, I don't want to bother them. Like, I saw them a lot when I worked out at the airport. Like, my favorite football player growing up, like, he got onto a plane that I was working. I took his bag and stuff like that. But I was just like, the dude's just trying to go home. Like, I'm just going to let him go home. Yeah, this is totally fine. But the only person that I couldn't not take a picture with was Tommy Wiseau from The Room. we went to a screening, and I was like, I have to, like, have a picture with this guy. But, like, for the most part, it's like, they're just trying to live their life. Like,
yeah,
it's cool. Like, what am I going to do? I'm going to just, like, show someone, like, hey, here's me and Joe Montana. It's like, who the fuck cares? You know what I mean? Like, I saw him. I know that. We can move on.
Here's the thing, though. Because when I went to South by Southwest, I went to the after party for Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Post Malone was there. Jake Gyllenhaal was there. A couple other people were there. And, of course, I got a picture with Post Malone and Jake Gyllenhaal. And normally, like, if I saw them in a situation like you, where I was like, okay, they're at the airport. They're just trying to go home. I get it.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't bother them. But I'm like, we're at an after party. We're celebrating the movie that you were just starred in. You know... Mm-hmm. You're expecting that people are going to come up to you and ask for a picture, talk for to you sure. about the movie. Like, that's part of your job. I get that. I feel okay about that. So I did get a picture with a few people there. And the picture that I got with Post Malone is awesome, because Post Malone is one of my wife's favorite people, like, in the world. Every time she talks about Post Malone, I always leave probably like a 2 or 3 second gap of silence. And then I'm like, oh, my God, you know what I just remembered? I have a picture with him. And then she just always rolls her eyes and walks away. It's fucking phenomenal. I love every time that I do that. It never gets old. I did also meet Casey Neistat in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And interesting situation. I feel like that is not the place to be like, oh my God, can I have a picture with you? But here's the situation. He initiated the conversation. And it was just him and I in the bathroom. So I was like, cool. We're in a safe space here. Just a little bro zone and me and you. And, like, I'm not going to let you slip through my fingers.
Yeah, you got to do it.
So totally with all of that being said, I do ask celebrities for their pictures. And
yeah, I don't blame you.
In a different vein.
I think, like you said, it's the setting. You know what I mean? Like, the last thing anybody wants at the airport is to be bothered by somebody. Like, the airport sucks. You know what I mean? Like, for the most part, for everybody.
Oh, I'm very pro airport. I love
the airport, but, like, if the people are, like, in chaos mode trying to get to their next flight or whatever, it's just like,
oh, sure.
I'm not going to be like, hey, on your way to your gate, will you stop and take a picture with me? It's like, no, fuck off. Like, but if it's, like, the right situation, I totally understand it.
Yeah, you just gotta corner him. You gotta corner him in the back of the plane and be like, "Oh, I see you have nowhere to go. Let's take a picture." The last thing I wanted to mention here about Amy is kind of where we end the film ish. She gets attached to this huge concert in Serbia that has like Coldplay and a ton of other bands. It looks like they're playing in front of like tens of thousands of people. A massive, what I would assume is like a charity event. Kind of situation. She is basically pulled out of her flat, asleep, boards a private jet, lands in Serbia, is what I would assume is pretty like blacked out drunk on stage, refuses to sing, has no idea where she is, doesn't know what's going on, and basically tanks like the final shot at a comeback for her career. And then we learn that she calls her friends, her two best friends throughout the entire film, and is normal and is like apologizing to them and like trying to make amends and is like, let's meet up tomorrow. And like, this is going to be so great. We're in this new chapter. And then that's the night she dies. And she has alcohol in her blood. I believe it was like 4 to 5 times the legal driving limit, which is insane. That mixed with like her bulimia, it basically just like caused her heart to stop. So all that to say, a big kind of like explosion out of like her career and her life. And like, it just kind of like ended. It's kind of crazy to me. Like I didn't know that. So going into it, I had known she had drug problems and I know she had died, in relation to those, but I knew none of these details. And I was like, damn, that's insane. Like you go to this concert and you just show up and you just like are drunk and you don't sing. That's wild.
It is. And it's interesting too, though, that like it was almost planned on her part, you know, because she wanted to get out of her contract to go tour. And this is like the only way for her to do it, because she follows it up by saying, oh, good, I can go to my friend's wedding now, you know, now that her tour was canceled, which is just like kind of nuts to think about. You know, it's like millions of dollars being left on the table. But that's, again, how much she wanted to get away from the fame, that she was willing to just kind of like sacrifice her own career for this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's heartbreaking to hear her, you know, have those phone calls with her friends the night before she passes. I mean, I guess in some respects it's like good that they were able to do that and get some sort of closure of some sort, but that just can't be easy either way. So yeah, it was a really interesting ending to the story.
Definitely agree. Like I said, I thought it was a good doc. I don't necessarily know if it's like great by any means, but I think it accomplishes the mission of like, here's Amy Winehouse and like, here's what you should know about her. Yeah. And here's kind of all the things at play. Even if it does, you know, correctly or incorrectly, I guess, like villainize certain people or play up certain narratives about the people that are around her. Is there a part of the movie that like you want to deem your true cinema that you either found the most interesting or anything like that?
I really liked her singing with Tony Bennett. And
you fucking stole mine. That was literally going to be mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the best part of the doc.
Yeah, it was so cool because she's just talking about like being up there with her icon and he's trying to play it down. You can kind of hear and see the nerves in her, you know, and she's just like, no, we got to take it again. It's got to be perfect. And he's like, you're doing it. Like, this is what we wanted, you know, but she just is holding herself to such a high standard because of who she's singing with. So yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to steal yours, but that was kind of the highlight, was just like seeing her with one of the people that inspired her growing up. It's so cool.
Yeah, it was so rad. And I think the line that stood out to me the most is she's super stressful and all trying to get all these things correct in the studio. And Tony Bennett is like, are you in a rush? Like, you got somewhere to be? And she's like, no. And he's like, neither do I. Like, we got time. Like, let's just do this thing. And I thought it was so sweet from him. And obviously we get a few more words from him throughout the doc of like, she was like a genre changing voice. Like, that is the truest jazz singer, you know, up there with Ella Fitzgerald and people like that, that he has heard. That's crazy to me. And like, for her to do this, with her life, I thought he also gave some pretty sage like life advice where he was like, life teaches you how to live it. You just need to live it long enough to learn. And obviously Amy didn't get to live long enough to learn how to live that life. And I was like, damn, like Tony Bennett spitting in this 35 seconds that he's voicing in this doc. Pretty cool.
Guy knows his shit, man. He has lived long enough to know how to live it. So, yeah.
That's true.
I think that was super smart.
That's true. A1X, we're doing documentaries because this is a doc. I'm curious if we've done documentaries before when we covered Val.
Maybe.
It's possible, but I feel like we did Val Kilmer movies because there's no way that I would take an entire episode to talk about Val Kilmer and not talk about Heat.
Yeah.
So I feel that like sounds, we're in the clear.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Sounds accurate. Okay, here's what we've got. We've got Jiro Dreams of Sushi, The Act of Killing, Icarus, Man on Wire, Exit Through the Gift Shop, The King of Kong, Hoop Dreams, When We Were Kings, Grey Gardens, Harlan County, USA, Style Wars, Camera Person, Super Size Me, Grizzly Man, Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, and Too Big to Fail. This is our short list of documentaries here. Mm-hmm. Anything on this list that you're going to pick?
No, nothing on this list.
Classic.
I do love Jiro Dreams of Sushi, though. I recommend that to anyone.
Very good doc.
Exit Through the Gift Shop about the Banksy stuff was really kind of interesting. What I am going to pick is a movie called American Movie, and it is a documentary about a filmmaker who is trying to finance his dream project called Coven, and just the whole process of what it takes to make a small budget film. But it is like the driest, funniest humor. I love it so much. It's from 1999. Man, it's such a funny movie. Like the first time I watched it, I was crying, laughing so hard because like just some of the stuff is hilarious. It won the grand prize at Sundance. Like it's a somewhat well-known documentary, but it's almost played to the point of like, are they making this up? Because like the shit that's happening is so funny, but like, is this actually real? Or sometimes it's hard to tell if it's a documentary or like a narrative piece, but I love American Movie so much.
It looks like it's on the Criterion Channel right now. So yeah. If you have Criterion Channel, you should be able to stream that. You and Sean Fennessy, 5 stars on Letterboxd.
Fuck yeah.
That's incredible to me. That's just what a wild
American movie, South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut, 5 stars.
Got real Fennessy vibes.
Yeah.
I have this on my watch list, so it's not new to me. I just haven't seen it yet. Maybe I'll fire it up. Maybe I'll fire it up on the Criterion. You know, take your advice for once in my life, but maybe probably not.
Probably not. Yeah,
now that you suggested now? I'm on the outs.
take it off the watch list. Like, oh, yeah. Ben said to watch it. So.
It's been removed. No can do. Some really good ones on this list. I'm sticking to the list. I'm going to go with Super Size Me, a movie that I encourage you to write on this list. Super Size Me is probably the only documentary I've seen like 10 times in my life. I feel like I maybe, not recently, but closer to like when it came out in my youth, I probably watched it like once every 6 months where I was just like, this guy's fucking crazy. Like this is, Morgan Spurlock is just, he's doing it. He eats McDonald's every meal, 3 meals a day for 30 days. And, you know, quite famously takes down like the super size that all of the fast food chains had at the time. He made a really interesting show. And I can't remember if it was called like 30 days or what it was called, but he basically took the idea of Super Size Me and he applied it to other things. Like he would do certain jobs or live a certain style or way or whatever for 30 days. I think it only has like one season, probably because it takes him like 18 months to make this, make this show. But Super Size Me is wild. And I like McDonald's, and so I'm at a real crossroads here with Super Size Me, knowing what I know about it. Good doc, though. Really good stuff.
That movie caught me off guard the first time I watched it, especially because it's just like, isn't it like the first meal or like within the first week, he just like throws up in the parking lot?
Yeah.
It's just like,
he's just like, I can't do
wife
this.
Is vegan or something like that, right? And he's like, all of a sudden, he's just like, going straight to junk food. It's like, yeah, man, that would fuck with your body so hard, but
so crazy.
The only other one to mention that we left off here, probably The Last Waltz. Speaking of music documentaries, one. So maybe more of a concert movie, but still kind of documentary stuff in there.
So yeah, still, I would take that. There's definitely some doc slices in that movie. I take that for sure. Okay. A24 ranking for Amy, A, B, C, D, F. 24?
Damn.
No, I'm not going with F24. I'm just saying those are the options. I'm probably going to go, honestly, I'm probably going with like a C minus 24. Like I thought it was fine, like yeah. edging on good. But like I don't have a personal connection to Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
After watching this, I still don't really have a personal connection. Like I just don't. I never listened to her music. I'm not that fascinated by her personality or her, you know, story of fame or downfall. Like I don't know. I missed the wave. So I feel like I'm at a loss.
And stories about women just aren't really your thing. So it's also,
I'm very anti-woman. Yeah. Anything about women.
Well known. Give me Oppenheimer. Give me Oppenheimer again. Let me watch that for 3 hours.
Give me the Oppie Boys.
Cut this down by 30. I'd probably give this a B minus 24. It's like a fine doc. I think it was interesting that we had no talking heads. We had plenty of interviews, but we didn't see anybody they talked to. But I thought it was interesting. They got someone like Blake, they got someone like her father to be on this documentary, and, you know, kind of comment on the actions that they took. So, yeah, B minus.
Okay. That's solid. That bodes well for your liking of women. Congratulations. Making me look bad at every turn that you get. I appreciate it. Next week on the pod, we are talking about I Saw the TV Glow. We're doing it. Mm-hmm. We were just impatient. Honestly, A24 has curated us to be impatient. They've trained us this way. So it's really their fault. And they're not giving us screeners for anything. So, hey, A24, if you want to give us screeners, you should. Yeah. But
or
we're seeing
a quarter of $1 million. Like, either way is fine.
Either one. We'll do it. Yeah. I think we should get the pod to screen on IMAX screens nationwide. That should
Damn,
be
dude.
What our goal is.
Damn. I like that a lot.
Would you want your face that big on a screen?
I would want some warning for the one that we filmed for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I need to know what I'm putting out there to the public.
Exactly.
We're seeing I Saw the TV Glow. So we're recording this episode a few days before it comes out. I'm actually seeing the movie in a couple of days, and then we're not recording the episode for about a week. So I have a pretty good feeling I'll see it probably a couple times before we record.
I mean, judging by the reviews that are out there so far, it seems like it'd be a movie worth watching a couple times. So
yeah,
I'm excited to finally be able to watch it. I think it's going to be great. But yeah, let us know what you guys thought about Amy. Let us know if you're going to go see Back to Black for some reason.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Back to Black at all. I don't really know if we need to, whatever the case may be.
No clue.
It looks quite poor, to say the least.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't look enticing. Like I said, I would rather watch this, but I don't know. Let us know if you're going to go see it. We are on Twitter and Instagram at 24 Minutes of A24. And don't forget to subscribe to us on our YouTube channel where you can watch our beautiful faces as we talk about these projects. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody, for your support. I am Ben Lahorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. Spring break forever, bitches.
Spring breakers and IMAX. Let's go.
Let's go. Make it happen, A24.
Yes.